Blog Talk Radio.
With a wheezy old guy here in Canada. Hello, world. Welcome to Masonic Effects. It's a good show today. Oh, excellent show. I want to begin by giving a shout out to all of you and to the fellows supporting the show, tuning in from South Africa. Hello, and the enthusiasts in the Philippines. Greetings to our aficionados in Greece and Serbia. It is wonderful. I would look forward to that opportunity to join you fellows in Brazil and just to chat, just to get to know you. And as I would with all of the others, to see, to learn. Of course, there are cultural differences, but to see, to improve my thinking about the craft by learning of the uniqueness of your perspectives, and Britain and Scotland, and Ireland. How could I not? I learned so much from history, so much, and there is so much history being produced that I've yet to learn. But from the oldest cultures of masonry, I've learned not to stand still; that masonry moves forward, and so I'm grateful. And as I mentioned, Brazil already, I'll save are my friends in Canada and the United States for the last. I believe that when we are together, something changes in our thinking and our chemistry. As individuals, you are in stark contrast with what I know about the nationhood. It's remarkable. I've met some remarkable men, and I'm so grateful. And I'll leave it at that, shall I, for greetings? Hello. Good program today. I want to speak about the influence. Huh? I think I want to create an argument and defend it with you and see how I do. That we allow ourselves to be persuaded by things Masonic. And I think that allowance is affected by character and intelligence and age, a lot of things, background. But it, for those who might not have thought about it, consider it that the I want you to go ahead and with your study. We break it down, at least through the program. Tried to created some categorical distinctions so that you can select one from the other. And I only say that because in my own selfish, narrow experience, that it as a new Mason, or not necessarily a young Mason, it all seemed so utterly overwhelming at times. And when I asked for direction, I received this gazed look. Are you daft? Why are you even asking such questions? It's unnatural to even ask. We all understand what it is. Of course, I didn't. And I see that around me today. Sea lodges are under strain, and there is this isn't new. In how many if I thought about the origins being for roughly those discussions that men like us had back 700 years ago. Is it possible for anybody to keep that type of thing alive? This isn't like a divine flame. I think it is possible to keep the notion of that conversation alive, because there's something very beautiful and symmetrical and natural about that kind of the feeling of continuity. And we do that quite successfully with our imagination. It doesn't take much to allow, but then I always feel like I want to make some allowance for people that just don't get the point of Masonry. And then I think, why? If they don't get it, they don't get it, and they're lovely people and get by and do well in their own way. It all helps to frame the point of the craft that we are and we come into this and to leave alone. It's just like life, we come into life alone. Oh, well, we have mother and we die alone. Oh, we have creator, divine. We're alone. And I don't know what the problem is with that. It's like the experience that you and I have each and every day. It's ours. It's ours, our observations. I don't suffer the neuroses of a boy trying to justify. This is what I think. This is what I see. Did you see it? Did you notice that? I don't, after a while, it's like, bless your heart, you have your own opinions and so do I. And yes, I've had the opportunity, thinking that way, of some remarkable encounters with you lot. Some just not frequent. It's not like I walk into a room and work a room. I don't have any interest in that. But I have noticed that some people share a particular way of thinking and an appetite for friendly discussion, because it teaches. There's an exchange of ideas, and we learn from one another. And I like that. I find that amusing and educational. And I do appreciate when somebody tries to sell me their idea. Even me, the Freemason, they notice when people have an idea. And I think that if an idea is fairly well developed, it stands well on its own. It doesn't need salesmanship. That that energy to try and to, you know, convince. I like the dialectic. I know some of you don't, but I do. I like being able to apply judgment, rational judgment, reason to ideas, and then come to terms with them for myself. And what is a real joy is that effect, that difference that makes, just that engagement. And I don't quite think it's like, you know, sometimes with people, with experts, and they are, like all experts, this would be beautiful, consultant. They open up so many avenues of thought. And in exchange, I try to give them my undivided attention. And of course, being what we are, we always have questions. And being what we are, we don't always absorb everything the first time we hear it, but we don't need to. I can sit and listen to some of these, online, listen to some beautiful, beautiful concerts, but I don't feel compelled to be a concertmeister or to be a pianist, a classical pianist. And I don't need to sit there and think of it, competitive? It's absurd. I don't need to think that that now I can set myself these objectives, but I can appreciate the training, the delicacy, the conversations between student and mentor. I can appreciate the result, and you can see where the mentor left off and this genius just took over and is interpreting and translating. And it's like the other day I was listening to Glenn Gould and saw his rapport with the keyboard, with the piano. It's mystical. It's mystical, a true, an amazing genius, and as such we mock the genius, don't we? Here we're trying to ensure that we are somewhat receptive to the themes and messages of the craft, but I don't at all think that we're browbeating anybody. This is the way. This is a way of mindset, a way of life. There are others. They always are out there. But this is an observation, where we stoop and look at the landscape and look at nature, and we're asked and we try to answer the basic questions about the divine and about our place in the universe. And then it's the interesting part of this. The acquisition of knowledge through masonry is the beautiful reference points, that are they're so helpful. As I'm walking along and I'm paying a living in that moment, it is easy to come to mind to think about everything in moderation, and I think that's sensible. But then, oh my goodness, what is moderation? Well, moderation is some kind of action. Don't just sit and contemplate the stars and the moon. No, this is a comforting way of thinking, an encouraging way of approaching, and to think that this is a persuasion. Very satisfying and enjoyable. I say this because it's this kind of conversation seems to be comforting to a lot of brethren, particularly around where I am. I tend to avoid the limelight. I don't trust it. Or maybe it's that I don't trust it. But this conversation starter, that's, you know, to be able to influence the conversation when people walk away, that's more satisfying than you can imagine. Is it enough for me on a given day, perhaps? But it's just that understand appreciation that the values of the craft are some beautiful mathematics. They connect, and I like that feeling of connection. That wholesomeness, that fulfillment, and even now as I speak with you, I'm looking at a reflection of nature all around me outside, and it's just beautiful. It's emerging where I am, in the northern hemisphere. We're heading into, we just passed into spring, and we're heading towards summer. Everything is just, it's like, the energy is in the trees. I'm surrounded by trees where I am. And it's just struggling to search for every bit of warm sunlight just to burst out. It's that time, those moments when the trees are budding and everything is growing. And it's just an earnestness and anticipation. It's lovely. But I get that same feeling as an old man when I walk into a crowd. I love that youthful surge of energy. You know, I just appreciate it. I did it, I think, in my own way when I was much younger, too. Whether it was the music concerts or... And I'm not the only one in the room. Oh, my goodness. No. And still, as I talk with you here today, I can remember that very kind gentleman who happened to sit next to me the very first time. My lovely wife, she's my best friend. But not because it's that we've grown to become friends, and it's beautiful. And she gave me a Christmas present, and it was a recital, opera recital. And the first that we ever saw was, I ever heard was, the theater was fairly new where I was. It was gorgeous. The acoustics were wonderful. And that energy. And it was Carlo Bergonzi, the tenor. Oh, and he was, you know, yes, he didn't have the same impact, but he was this impressive, very impressive talent. And I was just, his first piece, I was just over the moon, just barely could contain myself from jumping, you know, and jumping to my feet. And it's very nice. The second time I did it, his second piece, this fellow put his hands, you know, he's a very friendly man, put his hand on my arm and said, no, do not do that. It's the tenor. And hold back your applause, because he's not performing to his best right now. He's testing the audience, and he will work for your applause. Just give him an opportunity to earn it. So then the next piece was polite applause, polite. It's like that murmur, yes. And son of a gun, if it wasn't the lesson the older gentleman taught me, he performed, and I had this wonderful stranger mentor sitting beside me saying, did you notice? I noticed, and it's been with me forever, even now, as you can tell. That's influence on me. That's a lesson. And even in the telling, I find there's a lesson when somebody tells me those types of anecdotes, I find that very encouraging. It's like, there's something familiar about it. I basically think the craft is like that, only it's no aggrandizement necessary. It's like an old friend. It's like something that we accumulate. Good ideas, you know, the kind that your best mate would share with you about any topic. And the craft has been doing this with this. Wise injunction. There's no indoctrination. It's a way of thinking, a way of life that you adapt. But what you actually do, I think, is you begin to become familiar with who and what you are. Begin to answer those questions, at least for me, about purpose. And now I go off on tangents about form and function, you know, those kind of things, and reality and truth and dialectics, and these are just words that are like they are symbols that I associate both with my student days and with the persuasion of ancient and accepted. Good program today. I think you're going to enjoy the poetry of J.R.R. Tolkien, a man who lived in. Would you and I agree that he was creating fantasy? Yeah, like C.S. Lewis but lived in that mindset, huh? Can we agree that? Just think that you could go there. I wonder if he was able. He had this elaborate story in his mind and created these wonderful archetypes, these creatures and relationships and poems. We're going to share one of those today with you. But in the meantime, oh my goodness, this is, I want you to listen with me. This is a beautiful let's start the program off with a little Miles Davis. Sit back, relax. Thank you. Thank you, Miles Davis. Top up your drink. Top up your sparkling water, your tea, your wine, your brandy, scotch, or join me a nice cappuccino. I have to admit, I've impressed myself. Commentary. Sit back for this and let me know. Is this, have I missed something? What part? What were the influences that was being reflective? Thinking about, what were the influences? So if I talk, I'm just thinking out loud here. If I was thinking about influences on the fellows working on the minds working on flight, what influence was it on too much drink, too much time in the pub, and people saying, what the hell, why not? You know, are you saying to me, I wonder if mankind will ever fly? And me saying back, are you daft? I mean, men fly, men don't fly, men try the ground and birds fly. And yet, as good friends, you bought another round, and then somebody, you probably said, what do you think? And I said, it would take some skill to, you know, do we have, well, between us, we have enough sense of mathematics. We could at least write that out. And you have the machine shop. We could at least do that, couldn't we? Or I know that those fellows, and they have some equipment. And how hard can it, it's not going to get any easier unless somebody tries. Why not do idiots like us? The Romantic period effect on masonry. And I'm thinking about the poetic sense of romance, of course, where poets began describing this connection for the first time. I don't mean exclusively, but out loud, this sense of the connection with nature, and human spirit. What were the influences? Regicide, epidemics, the Great Fire, the influence on just Britain. We'll say Britain were the great influences. And then where you are, the same questions would apply. And I tend to think not so much London time, but in Dundee or Edinburgh or maybe Glasgow or Dublin. So these are the things, the regicide, 17th century, or fires. Or perhaps it was the byproduct of what became the Age of Enlightenment before that. The arts show us thinking was changing. We have a historical record. It also shows for a practical man, the purpose of values lies not in the thought, but in their application. For that, the world would need to wait for a society to be influenced, church and state. So in a way, we are taught the power of all estates is held by each individual subscriber. As their needs change, their support changes. Thankfully, we are of an order that thought to focus on enduring principles. Through time, men and their societies have adapted or not. Sustaining structures adapt. Rigid structure fails, leaving us a reminder. It never occurred to me that the purpose of masonry was Freemasonry. But I suspect this is not widespread. For many nice men that I encountered, their pride and purpose rests inside the social conviviality of a Masonic lodge, a Mason lodge. It is naive to suggest Masonry magically stopped being influenced by the greater society. We are, after all, human. legitimacy, authenticity, what we can tolerate changes over time. The struggle for some is to maintain the best parts of our past. That way we associate what was with what will be. Sonny Rollins. Beautiful music. Just gorgeous. I wanted to talk with you about an influence on a poet, I think. And you have to help me here. And again, I'm very limited. You know, I'm not a polyglot. I'm just plodding along here. I want to talk to you about a French philosopher named Henri Bergson. Some of you may have heard of Henry. Yeah. He was influential. My goodness. This fellow was born on October 18th, 1859, a Libra, in Paris, and he died in 1941 in Paris. My goodness. He argued that evolution, which he accepted as scientific fact, is not mechanistic, but driven by élan vital, the vital impulse. He was the first to elaborate a process of philosophy, rejecting static values and embracing dynamic values such as motion and change and evolution. His writing style has been widely admired for its grace and lucidity. He won the Nobel Prize for Literature in 1927. And he remains quite influential, according to the Britannica website, particularly influential in France. An idea. Here, the idea of Henri Bergson. Life is that which dynamizes within and beyond itself the forces of matter by suffusing the material present, the actual, with the virtuality of memory. But I want you to, I'm going to press you a bit today by asking you about the effect of that kind of thinking. That kind of thinking, in contrast to existentialism, Bergson's philosophy emphasizes the importance of the continuous flow of experience and the dynamic nature of reality. And I believe that we are part of that reality. We are part of nature. He believed that the world is constantly evolving and changing, and that human beings are subject to these larger rhythms. And when I hear the stories about not being able to jump back into the same river twice because I am different. I have changed from that man that was jumped into the river a moment ago to the man I am today. But this river flowing past me is not the same river as it was that moment ago. Bergson pushes the dualism of matter and mind to the breaking point, it's at, which I love. Matter is reconceived as the sum of all images. Idealism and deterministic materialism are bypassed. We get an indeterministic and an emancipated model of the world. It's freeing our thinking. Now, was he or could that be, how influential could that be, on this, the writer of this poem? This was the man, John Ronald Reuel Tolkien. This is the boy born in South Africa, a nod to our South African listeners. He was born in January 1892, and he moved with his mom to England. And when his mom died, he and his brother were taken in by their aunt. Yeah. So he, and look, like what he became. Now think, this is a man that we know he was a scholar. Oxford College, yeah, I think. And he was a scholar, medieval history, and an expert, considered an expert in many fields. And I won't stumble over them because I haven't prepared enough detail for that, but he was considered expert, and he was the fellow that wrote, as we know, these elaborate, enormous fantasies, these created creatures, archetypes, and allowed them to develop this sense of a relationship and an adventure with purpose and with a moral message, very moral kind of adventure. And far more fascinating, it allowed us to look in and examine the human condition very safely, because these were just creatures. You know, this evil wasn't a real person, a real mindset. It wasn't the real enemy. This was just a creature. It was an orc, or the goodness wasn't political. It was Gandalf. Is it possible that this was also being influenced, this writer was being influenced by the work of Henry Bergson, as the very little bits that I described to you? You know, is it possible that pushed the idea of dualism and that connection with all, the dynamic connection with change, emotion, and us being part of the universe, and ever-changing universe? Is it possible? Here is his poem, Tolkien's poem, Seasons. And think, this is a man that could conjure up these beautiful scenes, these reflections. I want to tell you this story, but I want to reflect on that story from that part of history. And if you know the key words, or he knew you would look them up, all of a sudden, this one word is a whole story in itself. Tassarin. I have to get the cadence. I was reading Goethe, and I have a different poetic cadence in my mind. Tassarinan. That's it. Listen, and what does that mean? Well, willow means Tassarinan. I walked in the spring. Ah, the sight and smell of the spring in Natasarian. Where's that? I said. And I said, that was good. I wandered in summer in the elm woods of Osiriland. Aha, the light and music in the summer by the seven rivers of Osir. And I thought that was best. To the beaches of Neldereth, I came in the autumn. Ah, the gold and red and the sighing of leaves in the autumn in Tarna Neldor. It was more than my desire. To the pine trees upon the highland of Dorthorin, I climbed in winter. Ah, the wind and the whiteness and the black branches of winter upon Orinathon. My voice went up and sang in the sky. And now all those lands lie under the wave, and I walk in Ambarona or Terramorna in Eldamome, in my own land, in the country of Fëanor, where the roots are long and the years lie thicker than leaves, in Telramornalan, the country of the birth. This is the quick analysis. The country of the birth holds the strongest connection for the poet as the place where the past is most closely held. This theme is explored over four stanzas, each of which explores a different season and region in the poet's life. The poet explores nature in great detail through the use of rich imagery. Spring, summer, fall, and winter are all each described vividly in a single stanza. And the shift from one to another is effective in highlighting the differences between each season. The first three stanzas each consist of nature imagery, followed by the line, "And I thought that was the best," until the fourth and final season, where the poet notes that none of the visited places compare to his home, where the history of his ancestors lie. This is a common theme in much of the poet's work. You see that? Can you feel it? It's really, can you feel it? I think of why I asked the question. I think that's why I had to. I thought it was worth asking, man. Here, Benny Golson for you. That will work. Influences and persuasions. We're an interesting lot, we Masons. Trying to free ourselves to absorb this, the beauty that's around us. And remembering in the background, none of this lasts forever. And if you're inclined toward hermetics, you think about the mentalism, this is an illusion perhaps, the reality. It's mental, it's of the mind. And knowing that, understanding that, I hear it and then you think about it, it made me realize that my sense of contentment, the struggles, the challenges, the doubts, they were all in my mind. When I was And at first I said, no, this cannot be, you know, said, no, I'm subject to all these insurmountable influences around me. And it's me that's weak and me that needs to be adjusting to all that happens around me, to the fates. And then I asked the question, what if I've been wrong all these years? What if at the core of it, maybe I'm not sure about Jungian collective unconsciousness, but panpsyche, that there is consciousness in every element of the universe? I'm not sure, but they're tantalizing ideas. But to be able to think that, to realize, and if you were, and men like you declared to me, people like you declared, you know, your history is just, it only exists in your mind. Well, no, you know, of course, how can that be? And you know that the future only exists in your mind. No, that can't be. I have this framework that I'm living through this soup, and that the past is always there in concrete terms, and the future is there and yet to be discovered. And then I think about the monk who says to me, Dale, you live in the moment. That's all that you are and can be, in the moment. And you know, Masonry revealed itself in a much different way when I had that notion. And so did you lot that are studying the occult. You became more, less enigma and more influential to me. It's like many pennies dropping at the same time. Things began to fall into place and make sense. What to learn, man? I learned as much from the poetry that we study very briefly in the show, or the savoring the music is just beautiful. Music that is, you know, in a, expressionism, I think. Jazz, that's the great appeal of jazz. And that fusion when players are working together, you know, it's just, how do they do that? Well, there are, you know, that wavelength. And that wavelength is what I see for, that's the potential for Masonry. Is that intellectual? I think it's something more. I don't think intellect is all. Is it acquired? I don't know. That je ne sais quoi? That I think there's all of us, or a lot of us, have that desire, but we haven't articulated. Just what would that, just to savor that, what does that feel like to be on that kind of a wavelength, where we're getting it, and then you can pass your thought process over to me for a time, and I can pass it back or over to him, and we're into, and witness, here we have music that is performed so that we can experience it. A metaphor, huh? Here, don't think I have to candy coat anything. That's not right. I can be honest that we have attempted here to replace judgment with understanding. And I say attempt because, you know, it is that dynamic, and depends on a given day, that what we said a week ago is not necessarily going to be the same context when we pick it up today. No. Here we're learning about those darn lodges in Strasbourg, aren't we? And, you know, the social class and the criticism, like, oh, look at who that new upstart lodge. But we're learning more that even the aristocratic lodge weren't really all that they seemed. I have a painting here given to me by a very lovely man, Kip. I'll just say that. that part of his name. And the more I look at it, what it reveals to me is nothing is as it seems. Only he devilishly has created these images, these creatures, these forms to make me realize it's not just one thing. You know, it's not just that other meaning. There are layered meanings. And I know he would have expected me to contemplate on it. And yeah, we keep that in mind. I'll share that with you, that notion that nothing is as it seems. There's all these other pieces. I don't think this is the deception of the world. It's not the world and nature hoodwinking us. No. There's a beauty in this, what this reveals. Here we're back in the 1780s. So long ago, it never happened. You know, can we feel enraged by what happened with this? Really? Yeah, I don't think so. But it's a curiosity. And it is, like, these stories are stories, like you and I are revealing our life story. And these are stories, and we can sit back and now think, what is there part of it that helps us to make a sense of the puzzle we live in today? For me, it has. I'll stop talking and share this with you. Although present during the 1780s in other parts of Western Europe, the discontent we find in Masonic lodges with which I am familiar in the Dutch Republic or the Austrian Netherlands, for instance, never employs language quite so stark and extreme as what the Strasbourg records contain. And they are consistent in their absolutism, their angry, either or quality, with the kind of language these same brothers use to describe in general terms the egoism of the titled and well-born. We can conclude only that this is a social universe where trust is very fragile, where if fraternal bonding breaks down, there is little else to mitigate the personal hostility of men, even from the same profession or class. Hear, hear, yeah. From such anger and distrust might spring deeply radical postures. It seems appropriate to note that the founder of Les Beaux-Arts went on during the revolution to become the supporter of the regicide. The aristocratic brothers in Le Candeur were, for the most part, hostile to the French Revolution. And decades earlier, Le Candeur had veered toward the more mystical and dramatic forms of Freemasonry. The lodge was also self-conscious in its memory of the persecution to which the Strasbourg lodges had been subjected. From its minutes of 1763, we get the valuable evidence that it was the accusations about sexuality in the 1740s that led the French Masons to gradually admit women, to create lodges of adoption. Le Candeur created such a lodge during the first year of its existence in 1763, and generally the records of Le Candeur show a high degree of integration between brother and sister Masons. If we have seen such patterns were much more common in aristocratic French Masonry than in lodges composed largely or entirely of the Third Estate. In Le Candeur, a brother had the option of joining the women's lodge, and he paid 36 livres to do so. Only in 1785 did the bourgeois membership of Le Candeur become visible, and the character of the lodge begin to change. What say you now? Do you see how we sound in history, huh? does the antagonisms, it's not new. It's not new. We don't, the magic is when men are so, what's the word, informed or aware that they don't allow that to happen. And what is that ingredient that brings those fellows together so that they don't make it, let it happen? Something worth the thought of. It's there like this brass ring. It's a weird thing. Again soon. The conversation isn't finished until we say it is, and then we're only making it up. There's the world around us is, as Bergson reminded, in a constant state of change, and we are observant little creatures in that landscape. And the changes are happening within us. So the question from Masonic Effects is, why wouldn't a man enjoy that? Why wouldn't he enjoy the best parts? The only way you can, I think, come to terms with it is realize the suffering and anguish that is happening and very real around us. But there is something else. And I don't think that for me, these ideas, the persuasion of ancient and accepted, is weakening. It's simply injecting that whisper. Do you understand? Do I understand? And I think particle by particle, I think for me, understanding is striving to understand. And because as soon as I feel that I have a toehold in one part, something else is going on that's taken my curiosity. I truly hope that we've been entertaining and informative and a bit educational today. And thank you very much for the conversation. It's been exceptional. You're an incredible company. And I look forward to joining with you again in just a few days. And in the meantime, the world needs you. They need men of value, men with principle. We don't need braggarts. We don't need aggression. We don't need antagonism. We don't need entitlement. The world needs you. They need the influence, the fellow that understands what's going on without having to bring attention to himself. More than ever, my goodness, do we need that today. Be that guy. Be that man. Enjoy life. Commit those acts of random Masonic kindness. And include yourself, for goodness sakes. Thanks. Thank you.
Thank you.